Now we come to the little talk that I always have the most difficulty with, and I don't really look forward to it because I really do find it very difficult to find the words and express what I would like to express. But it's very much a part of this practice. It is a very major feature. So far we've been really concerned with me, of learning to restrain this sense of me. It's the habits that we all fall into. It's very much a becoming aware of that self that wants to control and manipulate, that creates the dukkha that we all experience. We'd be very much focusing on that aspect of our of our makeup, and trying to put in place the tools, as it were, so that we can begin to work with that very powerful habit that we've all got. And that's pretty much occupied us for these few days. But there's another aspect of of this training, all Dharma training actually. There's nothing unique about this, but it's actually a very, very important feature because we have a practice that we don't lose ourselves in concepts and ideas and trying to become something and cultivate something. We take all that away and really are dealing very, very directly with just that emptiness of practice. That it's very easy for us to get locked in on this sense of me, and although we're trying to let go of the barriers around ourselves, we can in fact, because we get so focused in on ourselves and what we're like and what makes us up, actually we can actually be reinforcing the barrier and actually be more possessed by the self than when we first started, which is very unfortunate. But it does happen. So we must be very careful about this. And there is another aspect, another feature that is very important to bring to start to bring into the practice, which actually neutralizes challenges that sense of me and that thing that's holding on, that's the center of the universe and there is nothing outside of that, that we need to bring this other feature, this other aspect of ourselves into the picture and begin to nurture a relationship with this other aspect of ourselves. And that's the bit that some of us, I think most of us, get an inkling from time to time that there is something that's actually beyond me, beyond this little piddly me, this little piddly David that is so cocksure that he's the be-all and the end-all. And yet through that, from time to time, something comes through, there's something happens in your life that makes you realise actually that maybe there's something, is it at all possible that there is actually something beyond me? And I think most of us get that inkling from time to time. I think some of us get it very strongly. I think it happens to most of us. And I think that's a part, that part of us, that inkling we may get, but that part of us that is also there, I think it's that part that brings us to the Dharma. And the only way I can really begin to express this and try to offer you something to contemplate is I have to just talk about my own personal experience. I can't sort of do it in a more abstract way. Maybe it can be done. It's beyond me anyway. I can't do it. I just get I just can't really find the words. I mean, I can't find the words anyway, but even less so. And just my own experience with this, and maybe you can relate to it, but at least something to take on board for the future. I guess I have to go back and I have to think back to when I first came to the practice, which is over 30 years now, just over 30 years. And meditation, you see, when we start to meditate for the first time possibly in our lives, certainly in my life, the mind starts to get a little bit more quiet and a little bit more spacious. This is the awareness that we've been talking about. And it then becomes sensitive and receptive to something beyond that barrier that we've been locked in all the time. And this is what meditation does. It challenges that barrier. It begins to take that barrier down. And for me, I think maybe there was something there a little bit earlier. I think maybe just that inkling was actually the thing that sort of brought me. I don't know if it brought me to Buddhism, because I just read a book one day and it just had such a powerful impact on me. I just knew that this was what I had to pursue. This is just not that I was particularly looking for anything. I don't think I was. I was having a very good time at the time, and the last thing on my mind was a spiritual path, from what I can remember. But anyway, things happened in my life around that time, and this Buddhism and the Dharma and what I had to offer awoke within me. And I got a sense that there was something. It's something that I've always that. But for a very long time, it was always like it was always out there somewhere. It was always something external. And yet somehow, at the same time, it was very personal. It wasn't me, yet it was me. I think that was in place from the beginning, which was always a bit of an intrigue, to put it mildly. That something that was there that was always something for me to access if I were prepared to open myself up to, and something that would, talk, not in a literal sense, but would actually very much be willing to engage with me with situations and show the way, as it were, point the way, and a sort of a relationship started through that sensitivity that I grew to trust. Because the amazing thing was, if I ever allowed myself space within a situation, any decisions I had to make in my life, I mean, not, you know, if I want to buy a jar of marmalade as opposed to a jar of jam, I mean, nothing so mundane as that, but something a little bit more important in life. And I was prepared to give that situation space and learn to open up to whatever it was, and a bit always, as I say, always a sense that it was out there somewhere, that it would actually come and support me and actually point the way miraculously. It was miraculous, because even to this very day, actually, it's never ever been wrong. And it's to learn to trust that. And trust means that maybe your logic, your desire, actually wants you to do X, Y, Z, because that's what you want to do. But when we open up to that which is beyond me, it may point the way in a completely different way that we would like to go, that we think we should go, that we want to go, that we want to do. This is the way I want to do it. And some things say, well, no, that's not quite right. Maybe you should be doing this. Maybe something completely you've never thought of. Maybe it could be the complete opposite, actually, to what you want to do. And this is where trust comes in. Do you trust it, or do you want to take over in the usual way? Do you want to take control in the usual way? Or are you prepared to learn to trust something which is beyond me, beyond David, in my case? And that is a very, very important relationship to begin to nurture. Logically, it's a non-starter. So forget about it. If you're looking for a formula and a system and you're trying to, you know, go along those lines, those dualistic worldly lines that we go along in order to justify things and do things, if you want to go down that route with this, don't even bother to start, because it does not come from that realm. It does not come from that world. It is something other than me. And I like to think most of us have had a bit of a taste of that. Now, I think it's very important, very skillful, to develop a relationship with that feeling, that intuition almost. I'm slightly suspicious of the word intuition, but it's in that area where we learn to open up. This is all part of the spaciousness of awareness and the letting go of that thing that wants to control. To open up to that spaciousness, to open up to that, develop a relationship and learn. It's almost, and I mean literally have a conversation, talk to that mystery, but be open to it, be open to the mystery. And the more open we are, it will speak to us. It wants to speak to us all of the time. It's there all of the time. And if we only know how, if we only can learn how to be quiet and to be open and to suspend this fellow that wants to control, who knows all the answers, if we can suspend all of that and truly open, in other words, we have to give the self up. If we can do that, that communing will get closer and closer and closer until we learn to trust it more and more. So when we get difficulties in our life, rather than try to control and try to run away, manipulate, as we've been talking about the last couple of days, learn to trust that, learn to open up. And that burden, that thing that we may well be carrying that's so heavy, that's just so too much for us, with the spirit, learn to hand, to as it were, to pick that problem up, to that whole burden that we're carrying, and hand it back, hand it into that which is beyond me. That takes trust. And the more that we can open, the more that we can cultivate that relationship, the more trust we'll get. Because if we truly pursue it in the correct way, not another thing for me to possess. There's somebody else on the game here. I'm going to possess that. If you even begin to think of going down that road, finished. This takes a spirit of being prepared to open, being prepared to surrender, being prepared to give away all those precious possessions that we've got that actually are the burden, that create the difficulties that we have in life, but rather trying to manipulate and control in the usual way and invariably make a mess of it. Learn to give that to which isn't you. Learn to hand it over into that relationship, to learn to trust and let that which isn't me come into our lives more and more. And if we're really open and sensitive and we have the courage, because that's what it takes a lot of the time, especially in difficult situations, which we can have here, learn to trust that more. From my experience, and this is my experience, it's quite remarkable how it will support, carry, encourage and point the way. And I've had this has been my experience for many years, and I can only express it on a personal level, because I can't really, you know, there's not a, I can't give you a formula here. It's something that you have to learn to be open to and sensitive yourself. And but by learning to share your burden, I said the other day, try to share share our stuff in this environment, by if we start to do things for other people, that burden actually becomes a lot lighter than when we're just thinking of me all the time. And in this sense, that burden of self and all that goes with it, which can be, as we all experience, can be just so wretched at times. If we can, as it were, find something else to actually help us with it, to support us while we work with this great burden, this practice becomes so much more possible. We are getting a help, we're getting a hand, as it were, from a friend, from actually something that, when we really begin to commune deeper and deeper, we begin to discover that actually, well, this is my experience, that actually this mystery, because that's what it is, it's a mystery, actually isn't out there at all, but is actually in here. And actually come to see more and more that it's that which isn't me, that which isn't David, and it isn't something out there at all, some great being or some great mystery that's out there, but it's the mystery that actually what we really are, because that's what we are. And to discover more that actually that mystery is far, far, far greater than me. And to learn to trust and open up and to hand that me, that burden of self, all the fears and the aversions and the desires, learn to open up and to share that burden, to share that habit, that karmic stuff that just possesses us. Learn to share it, give it, hand it into that, if you like, the other side of me, that which isn't David, that is truly mysterious, truly unobtainable, is unobtainable now and will always be unobtainable. It isn't, you know, something, some object that we will eventually, as it were, get to know and get to be something that belongs to me. That could never happen. And if you ever go down that road, you will lose it. It will recede in you and you will lose it. And you will be very much back on your own again. And I know from my own experience, and you know, I have made notes of this, you know, I can think of a particular time. I mean, it's something that was very much a part of the partnership through ever since I've come to Buddhism. And my teacher, I think I have to give a lot of credit to my teacher, because she would often allude to this and often encourage people to open up and to give ourselves, hand ourselves into the mystery, into something which is beyond me. So that's always that was always a source of opening, always a source of directing. And it's something that resonated with me, because it was sort of in place anyway, and that just encouraged me more. And I know when I had times of difficulty in the first 2 or 3 years of practice, I was encouraged to do this. Just hand yourself into it. And it's amazing, it's wonderful how it will support you. It wants to support you, because it's the real you. And there's something there that knows the truth. And there's something there that knows the pickle that you've got yourself into. And it's there and it wants to help you. In a sense, it wants to help itself, because the two are not separate. And the more that we can open up to that, the more we can trust. And it's like a buoyancy, a life jacket. You discover that you're not alone. We think we're at this lonely little thing that's trapped in this sense of me, and there isn't anything else. But actually, there is something there that wants to be friends, that wants to help you, that loves you so much. You couldn't imagine what that love is. And it's a learning to trust and to open. And I know, you know, that time, I think that was very much coming together for me when I was with my teacher, but especially without doubt, that was such a remarkable support. And it's very easy for me to look back and think, well, you know, without that, it would have been impossible for me at times to carry on. And I can think of a specific time when I was actually in Sri Lanka, when I was very much practicing on my own. I didn't have a teacher in that way. I was very much ploughing my own furrow, and things on the whole were, things went very well, things worked very well. But there were times, and I can think of one particular time, where just Mara appeared and picked up on something actually so incredibly, pathetically unimportant, and I won't even be embarrassed to tell you what it is. But this is the nature of Mara. Mara can take hold of anything and turn anything into a monster. And it turned this particular thing into a monster that absolutely just completely tore into me like I've never experienced before or since. And just feeling completely open and vulnerable, no defences, and just, I really felt that at times I had this image in my mind of just cracking and running through the forest screaming, completely insane, waiting to be picked up and carted off to somewhere or other. I really did feel on the edge on a number of occasions. But that which isn't me, which I had that trust, came to my rescue on several occasions, where the communing, because I was prepared to open and to ask for help, came and supported me. Used to, sort of an insight would come from that would actually disarm Mara, would actually take the edges away, take the very sharpness and the very horror of that experience. It used to soften those edges to the extent that it allowed me to just have the ability to stay with what was there. And it truly rescued me on several occasions. I really mean that. And at those times when it got at its worst, when I was really very desperate, and I would turn to that which isn't me, it was done, and this is what's so important with this. This is so important. That relationship has to, your part of the relationship has to come of one of absolute humility. You have to be prepared to accept that this is too big for me. I can't do this. This is too much for me. And truly open up and hand yourself into that which isn't me. And I truly believe if that is a true act of humility and you can't fake it, believe me, if there's one that you can't fool, it's the one beyond me. It knows if it's genuine or not. And if that is a genuine act of humility, it will reach out and help in whichever way needs to be, whatever the skillful way may be. And that is something tremendous to experience, something tremendous to take into your life. That which is beyond me has so much wisdom. It isn't just compassion and love and support and warmth. The wisdom that it also has is beyond imagination. And it's that wisdom coupled with the compassion that will help and carry you through the difficulties that we have when we are prepared to open up to this self and actually prepared to take this task, this practice on, of actually trying to send it into change. It's that humility. This is the key. If you're going to approach that relationship like you would with your mates and your friends, and have that sense of you know, one on a piece of the action, as it were, or one to exert yourself or express yourself in that self way, which is a way of reaffirming me all the time, it isn't going to work. And the great characteristic of this, while the Dharma is there, the Dharma, I call it the Buddha, you call it what you call it, God if you like, it doesn't bother me. I call it Buddha because I'm a Buddhist. It's a word. Here, Buddha. The great characteristic of that relationship, unlike any other relationship that we may have, is that it isn't one where you meet each other halfway, as it were. I go that way, and then you come halfway, and I go halfway, and then we meet in the middle. The way this relationship works, and it can only work this way, is by you going to it. The Dharma will never come to you. It's for you to surrender and cultivate that humility of surrender, of giving up, where you will open, and you will open up to the Dharma. Then it will speak. Then it will manifest. It will show itself. It will help. But if you expect to sort of send it a message, "Oi, come here, give us a hand," can't happen. Possible. And the way that we can do this through our normal lives, the everyday situations, we can do it here on the cushion, we can do it just in our lives, we can learn to bring that sensitivity, to bring that something that is outside of this barrier, learn to open up to it, learn to feel it, sense it. But I'll tell you the best way, the best way of nurturing that relationship. And it's a way, this isn't new to Buddhism. You know, people have been talking like this since the beginning of time. There's nothing new. We call it Buddhism, but, you know, that which isn't me isn't a Buddhist. It's way beyond that. People have been nurturing this relationship since the beginning of time. And as far as I'm aware, I think the main way that most, maybe all, have actually cultivated that and discovered the way to nurture that relationship, to begin to establish that relationship, is through the act of bowing. I'm not aware of any religion, spiritual practice, spiritual aspiration, anywhere in the world since the beginning of time that doesn't have bowing as part of its practice. There may well be something, I don't know, but if there is, it's one thing, maybe somewhere. But I think I can confidently say that bowing the head is an aspect of all spiritual practice. Why do you think people do that? Do you think everybody's, I don't know, got it wrong? Because I know a lot of us Western people think, "Oh, you don't need to do that. This is a spiritual path." You may not want to call it a religion because Buddhism is a religion. You may like to shy away from that because of its connotations, but it certainly is a spiritual path. We have to accept that. And all spirituality requires us to bow our heads and give ourselves up. But how many of us Western people just think, "Oh, you don't need to do that. What do you want to do that for?" It's just, that's what Eastern people do. That's all mumbo jumbo. That's all just ritualistic stuff that doesn't pertain to us because I'm Westerner and I know different. And I know you don't have to do all that stuff. Well, I think you do, actually. I think if you really want to go, as it's said, to go deeply with this practice and to really open up and to aspire to all the things that we read about, and all the things that we hear, and all that we aspire to on the spiritual path, you have got to learn to bow your head, whether you like it or not. That is priority. It has far more priority than trying to get to the fourth jhana. Because any idiot can do that. This is about learning to open up and to go beyond the self, to give the self up. and all spirituality since the beginning of time has used that very, very, very skillful means in order to aspire, to cultivate that possibility. It is, for me, it is the most direct door, gate, to your true nature. When you bow your head sincerely, not ritualistically, which we can do very, very mindlessly, ritualistically, mindlessly, that's meaningless. We're just doing it because everyone else is doing it and because I'm expected to do it. That's worthless. Might be a bit of decent exercise, I suppose, but beyond that, it's pretty empty. But it's the opportunity that we've all got when we bow. And for me, this is what I've always done from the beginning. I mean, to me, the Buddha, there's a Buddha up there, so that is a reminder. That image is a reminder. That Buddha is a reminder of the Buddha that's here. So when I bow to that Buddha there, when I put my head down in front of that Buddha, I'm really putting my head down to the Buddha, which is inside of me. And in those moments, really gather yourself up with mindfulness and awareness. Gather yourself up in totality. Be aware of yourself. Be aware of who you are. And the burdens that we carry, or the difficulties that we have, and even the great insights that we got, because that's the possession too. Those are possessions, almost certainly, very powerful possessions. To gather everything up, literally everything up, and in those moments when our heads go down, hand it all back to the Buddha. Give everything away. Give everything away. Give everything inside of you away. This is not me. This is not mine. Give it away. And the Buddha will be very happy to take all of that from you. This is a very skillful way within practice to help us with this immense difficulty that we have, to help to share that burden and actually give it back to where it actually belongs, at that which wants it, that which wants to take it away, that which wants to be free. And the time that we vow is the best opportunity to actually cultivate that relationship with that which isn't beyond me. So never underestimate vowing. It is the most, I believe, seriously, in terms of all that we do in practice, I think it's the most profound thing that we could possibly do in our spiritual development. If it's done properly, not ritualistically, not mindlessly, but when it's done with knowledge of what we're doing, and be prepared to gather all of us up, all of ourselves up, and hand that and give it up, hand it back to the Buddha, and cultivate that relationship with the Buddha. And that nurturing, that which is something that, well, we spend our whole lives, to see that as a skillful way to help us with the difficulties that we have, with the burden of life that we all experience. We wouldn't be here today if we thought it was all hunky dory. Clearly, there's stuff that we want to get to grips with. And as I said earlier, it's so easy to get lost and lonely in this that actually makes it a lot, that really compounds the issue in the first place. If we can really learn to open up with that spaciousness and learn to come in contact and learn to develop a relationship with something that is so vast and mysterious and totally unknowable and will never be knowable, and yet it's the real me. It is not something impersonal. It is deeply, deeply personal. And yet, it is not attached to us. And it opens the mystery. It opens something inside of us that we can begin to aspire to that's actually beyond. We get a taste. We get a taste of that space. We get a taste of freedom. We get a taste of reality. We really begin to. It's like being in a, you know, often, well, this is not Buddhist, like, you know, you imagine being born in this room. Just supposing you were born in this room. And you've never once in your life ever left this room. And actually, you can have quite a nice time in here. It's quite spacious. You can do lots of things in here. You can have, you know, it's not bad. I mean, sometimes you get a bit fed up with it, but it's on the whole, you make do. You get on with it, and actually, you think, well, that's okay. Well, life is all right. This is life. Life means existing between these four walls, and you get on with it, and that's it. And that can go on for many years in your life. And then one day, somebody forgets to shut the door. There's a door and somebody forgets to shut the door, lock the door, and you try the door, and it's unlocked, and you open the door. And for the first time in your life, you step outside that door. And all your life you think, well, this is life. Life is living inside these four walls. And you go outside, and for the first time you actually begin to taste what actually is beyond those walls. And you begin to get a taste and a smell of the world around you, of nature, of the sun and the trees and the hills and the lakes and the incredible wonder, the incredible beauty and majesty which is beyond those four walls, that you were convinced that, oh, this is all right. You step outside, and for the first time in your life, you actually get a taste, get to see what your true potential is, what you are, what has been hidden all of your life, that you think that it's all within these four walls. And then you step outside just for a few moments, and you get a taste of what you are really like, which is just inconceivable. How can you go back into that room again and be content? You may go back into that room, but you'll always be wanting to get out the room. And this is what happens when we aspire to bring that which is beyond me into our life. And when we get little tastes of that which is beyond me, it's like leaving these four walls and going into and opening up to that great mystery, that there is something here that I don't understand, that is not my possession, and as much as I would like to possess it, I never could. And actually begin to see the vastness that is our true nature, and the spaciousness and the freedom and the lightness and the joy and the wonder and the love which is outside that door. And this all becomes possible if we are prepared to open and take this aspect of this feature, if you like, of this practice. Learn to make it possible. Don't block it off and think, well, it's all about learning this, this and this, and then suddenly I'm going to be enlightened. It doesn't work like that, you know. If you really think that this is what it's all about just working a few things out, and then you're going to be a stream entrant. Sorry, that's not its reality. It requires us to take on that spaciousness and learn to go beyond me. And I believe that this is a very important feature, important aspect of our makeup that we need to learn to open up to and bring into the practice, not shut it off. And if it's not there for you now at all, then learn to nurture that. Learn to t- take that spirit on of that otherness, of that which is beyond me. Learn to open up to it, because unless we open up to it, it's not going to happen. It's not going to come and bang you on the head and say, oh, he let me in. You have to open to it. It is never going to force itself upon you. And the way to nurture, to open that door, to push that gate open, the most direct way to our true nature is by learning to bow. And to bow with openness and with humility. Humility is something that, if there's one thing us Western people don't have, it's humility. And that is a very, very big impediment on the spiritual path. Eastern people have humility, historically. Humility is part of their nature. We've lost that humility in our development of the individual. It's something that actually gets in the way of life, to be humble, genuinely humble. But it's something, if you are really serious about the spiritual path and all that it promises us, that humility has to be something that we need to nurture, and you'll never ever fake it. It's impossible to fake, because that knows will know if you are being humble or not. It is impossible. And it's that humility that we can begin to nurture by learning to bow the head. Now, how many of us have difficulty just doing this? Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. What do I do that for? I'll sort of stand up here and, you know, bowing the head. Just know, I don't know, maybe everybody's comfortable with it. I don't know. But, I've been around long enough to know that a lot of people aren't comfortable with it. And just the simple act of lowering the head there is such a resistance that it's quite irrational, actually, to lower the head, to bow the head with some sort of humility. It's, for so many of us, we can't do it, and you can see it very often. I don't want to make people self-conscious, but actually you can actually see it in people's body language when they actually get down to bow, that the difficulty. If you ever watch an Easterner bow, they will just virtually collapse on the floor. There will be a wholeness there that just does it, and there is no resistance. There's nothing at play there. Watch, because I used to be around a lot of Eastern people, and it's something that's second nature to them. But then you watch a Westerner bow. I mean, that actually slightly exaggerated, but I have met people actually that isn't exaggerated, and see the body language. That is, wow, is that ever saying something? You know, body language, it gives us all away, but that is such a screaming statement that why can't we just, what's the big deal about putting our heads on the ground? Are bowing our heads. Why? Because it's me. It's the self, the I. That is an affront to the ego. Now, if we were all asked, instead of doing that, if we were all asked to do that, boy, I tell you what, there wouldn't be too many people who would have difficulty doing that. Oh yes, I can do that. Somebody do that 3 times. Oh, that's really. Oh, this is great spiritual practice. I like that. Ask people to do that, and yet, you know, and yet, how many times a day are we happy to go out there and put our boots on and bow our heads and go like this? Don't even think about it. So we can bow our heads. It's not physically impossible. But it's very interesting, isn't it? And there's an awful lot that's really focused in there, and that's Me bow my head to the Buddha? Me? Pah! Not on your life. Right there. Just bring your attention to that and learn to give that up. Learn to give that resistance up. This is not something small. This may seem like, you know, just learning to some little exercise. Actually, it goes a lot deeper than that. And it's that learning to give up this me, this thing that's greater than anything, certainly greater than that Buddha. It's that cultivation, so learning to give it up, learning to soften that solidness of me up, and a learning to actually give it, begin to learn to give it to something that actually, wow, is actually bigger than me, greater than me, and learn to open up to that. This will help to soften, will help to break up that solidity of me. It's a very, very skillful thing to do, if done correctly. And I know for myself, without being dramatic, is that I believed it saved my life on more than one occasion, at least it saved my mental life. Because I've been taken to the edge by me. David has taken whatever it is to the edge on more than one occasion. And without that support and that help and that ability to open up and ask for support and help, I don't know. I doubt very much whether I'd be sitting here, that's for sure. And, you know, I've had to couch it in personal terms, but I can't really express it any better than that. And if you want sort of formulas and you want logic and you want all the usual paraphernalia that so many of us Western people want, I can't give it to you. You could shoot me down very easily with that sort of line. But all I can say is from my own personal experience, and I don't think there's nothing unique about it, I'm not saying anything unique at all, that it's something to bring to practice that ultimately, never mind now, ultimately you will have to come to, if this path is nurtured in the correct way, sooner or later that opening will come to your life, and you will see that you will have to open and embrace this feature that I'm trying to point to now. You cannot, it's not possible. That which we aspire to is never going to happen until we actually bring the whole of ourselves to that particular feature. It can't happen. And that is such a difficult thing for us Western people to accept, because we like to think, I know all about this, I know how to do it. But this is a side that you'll never learn in school. Your intellect has got nothing to do with this, and how smart you are and how you've got it all sussed out. This is nothing to do with that at all. But it's in all of us, and this is the compassion of the Buddha, of the Dharma of the Buddha, is that it's for all of us, and we all have this side in us, irrespective of our upbringing, of whether we're white people or Eastern people or whatever. That side needs to be... We will discover that sooner or later has to become a part of our practice. And the sooner that we can acknowledge that and learn to open and nurture that side of us, the richer, the more skillful, the lighter the burden will become. The practice will just take on a completely different meaning to what most of us now have. So I would just like to offer you that as something to contemplate. All part of the surface. No, really, please don't underestimate it. And if you find it difficult, there's a big lesson there for you to learn. And be prepared to open up to that, because you will learn a lot.
I heard it's an allied issue, one of ritual in general.
Mm.
I guess it comes into the same ballpark as vowing, but I know it's something which I had a lot of resistance to, and I've asked myself, is it just my ego which has been resistant to this? Or am I saying, well, what are these words? What is this process that I'm going through? And there is maybe it's ego, maybe it's an ego resistance, but there's this other part of me that wants to say, well, why do I want to do this?
Mm.
You know, there is a reason, a kind of impediment there.
What, a reason not to do it or a reason to do it?
No, a reason to do it.
To do it. Well, you know, I think this is all part of the necessity to learn to be to that humility and that humbleness, and it is to do with faith, and this is all to do with spirituality, is to put our faith and our trust in the ancients, in the Buddha, in the Bodhisattvas, and the great saints and sages throughout the history of Buddhism that have actually mapped out paths that we follow, and they're all the same, really. And we need to open up and to embrace that, even if we think, well, you know, that's a bit, wow, that's a bit Eastern, that's a bit sort of whatever. But each of those, you know, the rituals and the devotional aspects of things, there is tremendous wisdom in all of them. We turn them into a ritual. We turn them into this thing like bowing, that it's just something that you do. You go to these, you know, I mean, the Tibetans like doing these things more than anybody, and all these different things that they do, and it's all this ritualistic stuff. But the wisdom that's actually ground in those, if you can see, open up, it's just tremendous stuff. And learn to access it and learn to use it for what it's really meant to be used for is a very, very skillful way of nurturing the practice, of taking us along the path. And in that sense, it all becomes, you know, very, very desirable to actually become more devotional, to become more... I don't consider myself to be particularly devout. Well, I'm not a devotional person. I'm not one who goes around offering flowers and incense and goes through the whole thing. I mean, I feel my relationship with bowing actually takes care of a lot of that. But there are many other ways that you can cultivate that sense of giving up, that sense of offering, of giving yourself away, which Buddhism offers. And I think that's something that you can latch onto and begin to use for its proper reason. You know, I'm not a devotional person, so I don't get caught up in lots of sort of ceremonial stuff, and that doesn't really appeal to me very much. I mean, I can appreciate it on one level, but it's not something that has a sort of a great impact on me. I think where that sort of thing is very useful, that more devotional side, I think it's very useful for people who find something like meditation very difficult. And it's their way into the Dharma. It's another way, it's another skillful way into the Dharma. We can do it through meditation and learning to cultivate that in the correct way. But of course not everybody can sit down and meditate. There's a lot of people that can't. And rather than, like, okay, well, that I'm now locked out. I can't practice the Dharma because I can't meditate. And I get that. People say, I can't meditate. Does that mean I can't practice? And I say, for goodness sake, you know, this is about compassion. You know, this is the Dharma. It's for everybody. If you can't meditate, try developing a more devotional practice that will encourage you to open up. That offering of giving away, of opening up to something beyond you. Try not to think of it as something out there, but learn to bring it in here. Mm. And that opening, that offering, that giving up and handing, and is exactly the same as when you bow, if you know how to use it. It's another skillful way for those that can't do what we're doing or what we think we can do. You can look at it in those terms. I mean, it's just something rich. It's just part of the rich tapestry of Dharma practice, and not some mindless ritual just to sort of so that we entertain each other, which is often what it can revert to. And then when we get bored with the entertainment, we have to think of another ritual to do, because we're getting bored with that one, then we come up with another one. But it's only because we don't really understand what they're for. So, you know, if you personally feel that it's something that could be useful for you, you know, it's something that can be, it can be very, very useful, very, very skillful. The same as bowing can be very skillful, it can be very mindless and very ritualistic, it can also be very profound. Was that the sort of thing you were saying? That was.
It's the issue of personal congruence. And it's got to be meaningful, as you, and I'm sure we'd all agree. If you bow without sincerity and integrity, then it's just an ethics.
And
I guess it's the same principle.
It's the same with all practice. This is what I mean about having faith and trust. You know, in the history of Buddhism, in the teachers and the sages, they're not stupid people, you know. You know, everything that's done has very, very deep wisdom buried in it. These things wouldn't have lasted for hundreds and thousands of years if they were just some stupid sort of entertainment thing that somebody dreamt up one day because they were bored. These things have been in place for good reason, and they've been carried through the centuries, and we need to put our trust in that. I say, I don't need all that nonsense. What's all that about? You know, I mean, that's self, that's ego. I know better. Well, if you know better than the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, then what are you doing? What are you here for? You know, this is about giving yourself up, giving all that away. And this is all part of that giving away. And this is where faith... We put our faith into something that we may have lots of doubts about, that we don't feel comfortable with, but we give it the benefit of the doubt, and that's the important thing. We give it the benefit of the doubt, and then we try it, we taste it. We test it, we taste it, and then maybe we will find out what they were pointing to. But if we're not prepared to do that, then it's just, you know. Why are you doing it? We want to do the practice. We want to practice the Dharma on our terms. We spoke about this yesterday or the day before. I want to do it my way. I don't care what the Buddha said. Who's he? He's dead. What does he know? I'll do it my way, and I'll pick a little bit for me, and I'll pick a little bit for me, and a little. Oh no, won't have that bit. Don't like that. Oh no, and I've got to pick a bit for me. You know, I mean, it's just a joke actually, but it's very, very common. And we've all got that inclination in us, especially us Western people. You know, we do have that conceit. And we just have to be very careful. Be very careful with it, and not buy into it. And the way that we don't buy into it is to have faith. But maybe they've actually got it right. Maybe the Buddha did get it right, after all. And possibly, I know it's almost inconceivable to imagine, but maybe he's got it right and I've got it wrong. But of course, that's nonsense. That can't be. But if you open up and trust the Buddha, and you trust the teachings, and you trust all that's been offered to us, thousands of years of wisdom offered to us, if you open up and give it the benefit of the doubt, if you pursue it, you know, you've got a good chance of actually being able to see where that's coming, to see the wisdom in what's going on there. But until you're prepared to taste it, it's never going to work. It's always going to be me. And if it's always going to be me, what are you wasting your time for? But this is how we are. And we have to be prepared to put ourselves into that changing process.
Actually, I have difficulty bowing with my head down.
Physically?
I think it's just the way I've been taught. I've always been taught to bow with my head up. And that's quite a hard thing to do.
Well, of course, I'm just pointing to this particular, it's one that I've used. I mean, I picked it up in Theravada when I went to Theravada. This is the traditional way. I mean, in Zen, which is what I was doing prior, of course, you just stand up and you bow your head like this. But I think it's not so much the physical thing. It's the meaning, it's the symbolism that's the important thing. Mm. You know, if you're when you go down like this, or rather when you stand up, that same meaning of actually bowing the head, if that's really present with you, then whether you do it like this or whether you do it down there makes no difference. You're still going to get the resistance and you're still going to get all of that, the world that comes around that. So the actual posture itself is traditional, and you follow whatever. I mean, in the FWBO, basically, I think you sort of please yourself, really. You've got several options. And so you pick the one that you like, I suppose. I mean, I try to unify it because I think it's a very skillful way of unifying the group if we all do the same thing. If we all came in and salute the shrine in, you know, 10 different ways, I don't think that's a very good, skillful way of collective practice. It's very distracting. And then people, of course, given options, will always end up doing their own thing. They'll always put their own little slant on something. So when they bow, their back leg will go up. Just to be a bit. Look at me, I'm different than you. It happens. By doing this, by agreeing to pull all of our different things into one, like this, some of us will find it easy, others will find it incredibly difficult. But at least if we unify it, then we've got a... You know, we've got a sangha. We've got something where we're all helping each other and supporting each other. So that's why I do. But when, you know, when you leave here, if you're used to bowing in another way, then you know, and that's what you're comfortable with, and that's what you do. But make sure that it's not a ritualist, a mindless thing that you're doing. You know, it's something I've always done from the very beginning. Is that at the end of the meditation period, I always bow like this. Now that's not. To me, that's not a ritual. I mean, it can be seen as a ritual. But what I do there, providing I'm really collected and really alive and aware, that I will pick all of that experience in that meditation, which could be, you know, there could be dukkha there, there could be just wonderful insight, whatever it is. Just surround the whole thing. And when I bow my head, I give it all away. It's not mine. It's not my possession. Even if there's great wisdom there, it's not mine. And to nurture that spirit of just letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go, and handing over, even great wisdom, because that can be our biggest attachment when we attain some insight. Wow! We hold on to that more than anything, and that can be the biggest blockage and biggest impediment in practice. So, I say, I do this not just to impress people. If anybody happens to be looking at me, I sincerely hope they're not. is to gather that whole period up, whatever's gone on within it. This is not me, this is not mine. Give it away.
David, you said you have a little ritual you introduce into your prostration to.
A ritual?
A little thing where you say, please forgive me, please help me, and please accept me,
which
I found very useful, but I can't see how to fit it into this group when we're prostrating.
But you don't say that loud.
No.
You say it to yourself.
So you say it.
Well, you can say it.
But don't you
time.
Do it, wouldn't you
can say it, and you, well, I mean, I just, because, you know, if you gather yourself up and you really focus on why you're doing it, not in some mindless way, and you really feel as though you're opening up to that great mystery, is that communing in a very subtle way, not in a crude way, but in a very subtle way, in a feeling way more than a discursive way. And for me, that's how it's just my own personal thing, and it's not something I made up. It's something that actually. I mean, I don't know what the word is, the Buddha, if you like, or the mystery, it actually told me to say that when I was bowing one day. that communing was so fulfilled that actually in the act of bowing it actually spoke those words. That was for me.
Pranya drop, isn't it?
Pardon?
Pranya drops. Wisdom drops.
Is that what you call them?
Well, in nice ways.
Whatever you like, George. And of course they obviously resonate for me, and they have such meaning. For me those three expressions embrace everything. Embrace the whole relationship about forgiveness for this thing that's always getting in the way and is blocking you, the great mystery. Forgive me and help me with it, because I can't do it on my own, it's too big. And also allow me to enter that vastness that's the true nature. And to me that just embraces samsara and nirvana, if you like, the whole thing, every aspect of what we are, both ignorance and wisdom. It embraces all, and that's how it's worked for me. And if it's something that's useful for you, then by all means use it. I know actually a number of people that do use it. That was never in my intention. But it's if it resonates for you, it's something that can be very, 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 very useful, to very skillful to cultivate that relationship. Enough for today. Thank you.